Order. End of question time. Minister of Statements. Minister for Health.
Mr. Speaker, sir. Minister for Health usually don't get involved in the debate on FTAs. But I'm delivering this ministerial statement for two purposes. First, even before the general election last July, the PSP has repeatedly alleged that CECA, meaning the Comprehensive Economic Cooperation Agreement between Singapore and India, allows professionals from India, and I quote, a free hand to come and work in Singapore, unquote. In his social media post on 22nd June this year, Mr. Leong Man Wai again said, and I quote, the most important economic policies that have affected the jobs and livelihoods of Singaporeans relate to foreign PMEs and free trade agreements, in particular CECA, unquote. Mr. Speaker, these statements are false. They have been repeated for too long. I am a former trade negotiator at MTI when I was a civil servant. We worked closely on several FTAs. I worked with a very dedicated team who has over two decades fought hard for the interests of Singapore to expand our economic and political space for our small island state. And I feel I owe a duty to correct the falsehoods. Indeed, Singaporean PMEs, like PMEs in other advanced economies, are facing challenges. Many have given us their feedback, and the government has been taking steps to address their concerns. But our FTAs in general, and CECA in particular, are not the causes of the challenges our PMEs face. If anything, they are part of the solution. FTAs and CECA have been made political scapegoats to discredit the policy of the PAP government. The second reason to deliver this ministerial statement is to put in context, on behalf of MOM and MTI, the parliamentary questions that have been posed to the ministries concerning foreign PMEs, FTAs, and CECA. Dr. Tan Si Ling will further elaborate on the answers. Taken together, Dr. Tan and I will address oral questions 1 to 3 and written questions 19 to 24 from yesterday's order paper, and oral answers 1 to 6 and written questions 40 to 42 from today's order paper. A total of 18 questions. Several of the questions were filed by PSP's two NCMPs to gather data for a subsequent debate on the motion they intend to file. So where we can, we will provide relevant data to equip all parties for that subsequent debate. So let me recapitulate how we got here. First, as I mentioned, for months now, the PSP has alleged that FTAs and CECA have led to the unfettered flow of Indian professionals, displacing Singaporeans from their jobs and bringing about all kinds of social ills. And this is a seductively simplistic argument that workers facing challenges at their workplaces can identify with and has stirred up a lot of emotions. CECA-themed websites have sprouted, filled with quite disturbing xenophobic views about Indian immigrants. Words gradually became deeds. Toxic views turned into verbal and physical assaults on Indians, including our citizens. It is sad that serious issues concerning the economic well-being of our country and workers have descended to this. That is why the Minister for Law called out such xenophobic behaviour during the May sitting of this House and challenged the PSP to table a motion on CECA so that the matter could receive a proper public airing. The PSP has since made a public statement on the matter, standing by its view on FTA and CICA. It filed several parliamentary questions requesting for more data and information. So today I will talk about the following. One, what is fundamental to Singapore's ability to earn a living and survive? Two, why FTAs, including CICA, advance our interests and are not the cause of the challenges faced by our workers? And three, what then are the causes of Singaporeans' concerns and how do we address them? Dr. Tan will provide detailed answers to the specific questions, including providing the data which will be useful for our subsequent debate and putting that data in context. Let me start with the first question. What is fundamental to our economic survival? Simply put, we are too small to survive on our own, and we need to tap into the global markets to earn a living and be self-reliant. What do we have to start with? We have no natural resources, but we have one precious natural endowment, and that is our geographical location. It is a lasting advantage, but one which requires us to work very hard to realize and to sustain. And if we succeed, it helps compensate for our lack of size. And that is what we have done. By capturing the trade flow through the Straits of Malacca and Singapore, PSA became the largest container transshipment port in the world. It is a unique interchange in the world, connecting East and West, Europe, Middle East, India, China, and the port is central to the growth of the maritime industry, responsible for 160,000 jobs in Singapore today. In addition to our seaport, we also have grown into an aviation node. Before COVID-19 hit us, Changi was one of the busiest airports in the world, and it shall be so again. Though in aviation terms, our geographical location is not quite ideal, we made it happen with the renowned Changi and SIA experience. Before COVID-19 struck, the aviation-related industry were supporting 190,000 jobs. So with these good global connections, we built up the manufacturing sector, about one-fifth of our GDP today. And we obviously don't manufacture just for Singapore, we are too small, but we manufacture for the world. And manufacturing supports another 440,000 jobs today. Our exports also include trade in services. And one growing services sector is financial services. And today, almost every major global financial services institution is in Singapore, carrying out a range of activities, including new ones, such as fintech and green finance. The financial services sector employs over 170,000 people. We are also becoming a center for technology, research and development. So many global firms, from FANG to BET and many more, are in Singapore. And they make Singapore their regional or global innovation center or engineering hubs. And today, 50,000 international companies operate out of Singapore. 750 of them have made Singapore their regional headquarters. None of this would have happened without a clear strategy implemented well. It was a long, painstaking process, part of the story of our island nation. Clean government, rule of law, safety, you can walk on the street any time of the day, political stability, good infrastructure, high standards of education, openness to the world, all this and more come together to make us a good place to invest and created many jobs. I should emphasize that another big plus point for us is the quality of the Singaporean workforce. Our people are well known to be well educated, diligent, responsible, trustworthy, and we get things done. We have one problem, which is there are too few of us Singaporeans, a point which I will come back to later. On top of all these plus points, we have built a network of 26 free trade agreements, including the US, China, EU, ASEAN, Japan, South Korea, India, Australia, and New Zealand, all our major markets, and they are all our FTA partners. And this brings me to the next topic, why FTAs, including CICA, are important to Singapore. We started our FTA strategy in the late 1990s. We thought through it carefully and executed before other countries did. So it gave us a very precious early mover advantage and greatly boosted our efforts to export, attract investments, venture overseas, and created good jobs for Singaporeans. Our total trade is three times our GDP. Since 2005, our total trade has nearly doubled from around 890 billion Sing dollars to now 1.5 trillion Sing dollars. And today when EDB goes out and persuades investors to come to Singapore, our network of FTAs is always a major selling point. FTAs are especially important to our SMEs. They free them from being constrained by our small domestic market and give them access to global markets. So our SMEs are sending all kinds of Singapore-made products overseas, from canned food, barbecued pork, frozen roti prata. I heard some are exported to India, to medical devices, machines, components, chemicals. FTAs are also spurring our companies to venture abroad. Our investments overseas increased nearly five times, from 200 billion Sing dollars 2005 to over 930 billion Sing dollars 2019. So when our companies grow overseas, they become stronger, and they also employ more Singaporeans here. If we accept this basic reality, that Singapore needs the world to earn a living, then we would realize the fundamental importance of all our FTAs. They are a keystone of the economic superstructure that we have built. We could not have advanced the welfare of Singaporeans to the degree that we have without FTAs. We cannot take all this for granted. Recently, we fell in the 2021 IMD World Competitiveness Ranking from first place to the fifth place. Amongst the components evaluated, we continue to do very well in terms of government efficiency and economic competitiveness. However, we lost ground in terms of openness towards global talent and trade. But I hope this is temporary and due to the effects of COVID-19. Overall, we are still holding our own in terms of foreign investments. In 2020, even as 45 companies ceased operating their regional or global headquarters in Singapore, over 130 companies set up such headquarters here. So when you attack FTAs, and worst, if your attacks succeed, you are undermining the fundamentals of our existence, of the way we earn a living, of all the sectors FTAs support, and the hundreds and thousands of Singaporean jobs created in these sectors. As the attacks on FTA, especially CICA, have been very specific, let me now spend some time to explain how FTA works. And to prepare for this statement, I have to dig up my old negotiating notes and do quite a bit of revision and homework. Here it goes. The key disciplines of an FTA are as follows. It requires a country to remove or lower tariffs on substantially all trade between the FTA partners. This is of tremendous benefit to Singapore. Very good deal. Why? Because other countries customarily impose tariffs on thousands of items. We are already very open. We impose duties on only three alcoholic products. Beer, stout, and Samsu. All my years of negotiating FTA, I don't know what Samsu is, neither have I drank it before. But these are our three tariff items. Hence, any FTA that substantially removes tariffs imposed by both parties is inherently beneficial to Singapore. FTAs also require governments to accord protection to foreign investments and ensure that regulations are imposed fairly and equally on both local and foreign firms. They also set standards on protection of intellectual property. Singapore, we always protect foreign investments and applies our regulations fairly. This makes us attractive to foreign investors. So it has always been in our interest to do that. So abiding to these principles and disciplines is not a problem for us at all. In fact, as more of companies expand overseas and they create their own products, they too hope that Singapore can negotiate similar protection for them when they go overseas. So the investment and intellectual property protection disciplines in FTAs are therefore important assurances for our companies. Newer FTAs also set certain environmental and labour standards. Not every country supports them, but Singapore believes that they reflect contemporary concerns relating to free trade and investments. And specifically on CICA, this FTA with India benefits Singapore in many ways. Signed in 2005, it was India's first comprehensive bilateral FTA with any country. And CICA gave Singapore a strategic first-mover advantage in India just when the continental country was taking off to be an economic powerhouse. CICA reduces tariff barriers, which made Singapore goods more competitive in the Indian market. And partly because of that, bilateral trade between Singapore and India has grown by over 80%. From $20 billion Sing when CICA came into force in 2005 to $38 billion in 2019. And similarly, Singapore's direct investment abroad in India grew by 50 times, 50, from $1.3 billion to $61 billion during the same period. In 2019, 660 companies from Singapore have investments in India, almost double the number a decade ago. As these companies grow regionally, they hire more people back home. And in 2019, they employed 97,000 locals. Despite these significant benefits, FTAs are controversial in many countries. As a trade negotiator, I've listened to the problems and sensitivities of many of our FTA partners. What are these sensitivities? Some countries wish to protect certain sectors, such as agriculture. That's a very common one, which Singapore does not do. We have some eggs, we have some fish, but more for a bit of source diversification. We never seek to conquer the world with our eggs and our sea buses. Others could not live up to, say, the transparency standards of, say, government procurement or intellectual property disciplines. Still others are concerned about the influences of foreign culture through industries such as arts and entertainment. Canada, for example, very sensitive about this area. So the toughest job and the most time-consuming job of a negotiator is to identify and understand the sensitivities of your country and then find ways to protect or to address them. How do we do so? We find words that give you comfort, that address the sensitivity. And we call these words in our jargon exceptions or carve-outs. When we have a big carve-out with strong protection in our sensitive areas, we will say this carve-out is strong and big enough for a jumbo jet to fly through. In some sensitive areas, it is easy to negotiate exceptions or carve-outs because everyone agrees. One example is right of taxation by governments. Another one is national security. A third one is immigration. Every country holds the view that there cannot be unfettered movement of people across borders. Every FTA partner believes that. That would create social unrest and a big public uproar. Governments must retain the ability to impose immigration and border controls, and FTAs cannot undermine that. Hence, in all FTAs and also WTO agreements, you will find that immigration powers are strongly and prominently preserved and protected. You can find such standard clauses in the WTO agreement as well as in all our FTAs, including CICA. As so many falsehoods have been said about the immigration-related parts of CICA, let me set out in some detail what is really in the agreement. Immigration matters are set out in Chapter 9 of CICA, Movement of Natural Persons. The legal text is available online, so I will only detail the salient points. One, the chapter makes it clear that government's ability to regulate immigration and foreign manpower is not affected by the agreement. The government retains full rights to decide who can enter the country to live, to work, become PRs, or become citizens. This is clearly set out in two clauses. They are standard clauses commonly found in all FTAs. And they are also the second and third paragraphs of the chapter of CICA. So it is hard to miss them, as you can see them on the first page. I will just read them out. Clause 9.1.2. This chapter shall not apply to measures pertaining to citizenship, permanent residence, or employment on a permanent basis. Clause 9.1.3. Nothing contained in this chapter shall prevent a party from applying measures to regulate the entry or temporary stay of natural persons of the other party in its territory, including measures necessary to protect the integrity of its territory and to ensure the orderly movement of natural persons across its borders. That's the first point. Second point, the obligations relating to the movement of natural persons in CICA, as in all FTAs, are not broad principles with wide applications, but actually highly specific. What are these broad principles that you can find in FTA? One broad principle is that of national treatment. It is found in some chapters of FTA, such as trade in services and investments. This means, I mentioned this just now, this means you cannot discriminate against foreign service providers and investors. Whether they are local investors or foreign investors, you treat them the same. Regulations and benefits that apply to local firms must apply evenly to foreign-owned ones. So, if immigration had not been carved out and national treatment principle had been incorporated into Chapter 9 of CICA, then indeed, Indian workers would have to be treated like Singaporeans and would have had free rein to come to live and work in Singapore. That is what the PSP claims, except that there is a strong immigration carve-out and national treatment is not found in Chapter 9 of CICA, nor any other corresponding chapter in the FTAs that Singapore has entered into. Mr. Speaker, sir, I emphasize and underline and highlight and bold with bigger fonts, color red, that nothing in this agreement implies Singapore must unconditionally let in PMEs from India. Contrary to PSP's claim, our ability to impose requirements for immigration and work pass has never been in question in CICA or any other FTAs that we have signed. Instead, then what are the obligations of Chapter 9 of CICA? They are highly specific, such as require the parties to process applications for temporary entry with some expedition and with certain transparency, such as informing the applicants of the outcome of their applications and not leave them in suspense. A very reasonable thing to do and to agree to adhere to. We also have to accord a certain duration for the validity of the permits, should we approve. And approval must be based on them meeting our prevailing work pass conditions. Also very reasonable. Such a commitment on duration is also not something unique to SICA, because similar commitments exist in other FTAs and are also found in WTO agreement signed by 164 members, including Singapore. Many parties to FTAs also commit not to impose labour market tests. This is a common clause in our FTAs, including with India, Australia, China, and the US. It means we do not insist that companies go through onerous processes and documentation to prove that no suitable locals will take a job before they can hire a foreigner. Companies in Singapore or any other places do not hire this way. What they do, the common and best practice, is to interview suitable candidates, consider them all fairly, and then make a judgment on the best person. And these are all market-friendly, widely adopted, reasonable obligations. Let me also specifically address two aspects of the chapter on movement of natural persons in SICA that has been singled out for criticism. First, the PSP pointed out that SICA listed 127 categories of professionals and hence claimed that Indian nationals in these professions cannot freely come here to work for a year. This is false because, as I explained earlier, all foreign PMEs have to meet our work pass conditions in order to come and work here. The listing then, what does the listing then show? The listing shows the types of Indian professionals who may apply to work in Singapore. It does not mean that we must approve their application. It's just that you can apply. India, for its own reasons, requested for such a list, similar to what they have in their FTAs with Korea and Japan. In fact, even if they had not listed the professions, their PMEs could still submit work pass applications to work here. But the list probably meant something to India, because there may be countries that will not even let you apply. Yeah, that's how protectionist some countries may become. And India is trying to secure their interests there. This is in fact how other FTA works. With or without listing of professions, nationals from our FTA partners are not precluded from submitting work pass applications, which will be evaluated based on our prevailing criteria and work pass conditions. Thus, the point being made by PSP on the list of the 127 profession is a red herring. The list does not confer any free pass to any Indian nationals. The second common criticism is that intra-corporate transferees from India can also freely enter Singapore to work. Based on my explanation on how the chapter works, this is again not true. Intra-corporate transferees also have to meet our work pass qualifying criteria. In any case, the total number of intra-corporate transferees from all over the world and not just India that have come to Singapore to work is very small. In 2020, there were only about 500 intra-corporate transferees from India to Singapore, in Singapore, less than 0.3% of all employment pass holders or EP holders. So, Mr. Speaker, sir, I hope we can put a stop to all this misinformation about our FTAs in general and SICA in particular. Nevertheless, it is important that we need to recognize that PMEs in Singapore do face challenges. And I see at least three challenges that they are facing. First, there is more competition from foreign PMEs. Indeed, the number of EP holders has increased from 65,000 in 2005 to 177,000 in 2020. So an increase over 15 years of 112,000, or an annual growth rate of just under 7%. Over this period, however, the increase in number of local PMEs is much higher, by over 380,000. So 380,000 for local PMEs, 112,000 for EP holders. And these numbers underline an important point, that competition between foreign and local PMEs is not a zero-sum game. In fact, the converse is often true. By combining and complementing local and foreign expertise, we can attract more investments and create many more good jobs and career choices for Singaporeans. The downside is that with more foreign PMEs in Singapore, they can compete for jobs with locals at the company level. And at that level, there can be a zero-sum situation. So there is a trade-off at play here, if I put it simply. A, many jobs, strong competition. B, few jobs, no competition. And we need to find the right balance where there are more jobs, some competition. And that is the way to advance the interests of Singaporeans, not swing to any extreme position, but strike that careful balance and then adjust if we find that that balance is off. But if someone promises you more jobs, no competition from foreigners, is selling you snake oil. It is not possible. It cannot be on any government's policy menu. I should point out that besides complementing our local workforce to create more opportunities, foreign PMEs also help cushion the impact on the local workforce when times are bad. Because during a downturn, foreigners bear the brunt of job losses. During COVID-19 for the 12 months to April 2021, the number of employment pass holders dropped by about 21,600, and S-pass holders fell by about 26,800, altogether 50 over 1,004 over the 12 months. On the other hand, local employment has been stable. Unemployment rate for local PMEs in June 2020, this is a labour market survey, so it comes out only once a year during June. So June 2020, unemployment rate for local PMEs, despite this is immediately after the circuit breaker, was at 2.9%. Resident unemployment rate, September 2020 was 4.8%, May 2021, 3.8%, came down by one percentage point. Without the foreign buffer, when our economy ran into trouble, the situation would have been much worse. Singaporeans would have lost many more jobs. So while the stock of EP and S-pass holders can fluctuate, Singaporeans enjoy greater security of employment. With help from various government measures, job support scheme, help firm, help enterprises keep their workers. We have a multi-ministry national jobs council, came up with many initiatives to help place displaced Singaporeans into jobs, including also a job growth incentive to help to encourage companies to hire local workers. So when Mr. Leong Man Wai said in his Facebook post that we need to recoup a few tens of thousands of jobs from foreign work pass holders, he may not know that we have already done so. This always happens in a downturn. The second challenge is the profile of foreign PMEs. They are concentrated in certain sectors and from certain countries of origin. And indeed, as our digital economy and our needs for tech talent grew, more PMEs from India came into Singapore through our EP framework. And when that concentration happens in areas such as Changi Business Park, some may feel that we have lost a part of Singapore. Members of the House have raised this concern. We are taking this seriously and studying what we can do to lessen the problem. I hasten to add that dealing with excessive concentration is not a straightforward matter of chopping up the operations of a company here. We don't want to unintentionally cause the whole investment to move elsewhere. And this will hurt even more Singaporeans. And this is part of the careful balancing that I talked about earlier. Third, at the company level, there may be unfair hiring practices, with department heads preferring to hire foreign PMEs or even foreign PMEs from certain countries. And this is not right. Whatever system we set up, there will always be some abuses. We must tackle the abuses when they occur as swiftly as possible, while continuing to adopt sensible economic policies that are good for Singapore and Singaporeans. MOM takes a strong stance against such discriminatory practices, and together with our tripartite partners, has been actively enforcing against errant employers. The Minister for Manpower will speak on this further. I have explained the underlying reasons for the difficulties faced by our PMEs so that we know what it means for us in terms of public policy choices and how we can most effectively address the challenges. If we mistakenly blame FTAs and SICA for these problems, our responses would be disastrously wrong and would make our problems worse. Mr. Speaker, let me say something in Mandarin.政府认真看待民众的担忧，并且已经采取行动，着手解决问题。比如呢，我们已经提高了引进外来专业人士的门槛，收紧外来人员的流入。我们也更严厉地进行执法，调查和处分那些歧视本地人的雇主。 我们对待问题的时候应该查清楚导致问题的真正原因，才能对症下药。可是在过去的一年，新加坡前进党并没查明真相，便硬说新加坡印度的自由贸易协定，简称SICA，是罪魁祸首。说这个协定让大量的印度籍人员毫无节制地涌进新加坡， 夺取新加坡人的工作。前进党也说，我们签订的所有自由贸易协定损害了新加坡人和我们经济的利益。很不幸的，他们已把自贸协定政治化了，成了他们攻击政府的武器。他们的说法不正确，模糊了事实。这种言论呢， 也挑起了一部分国人的排外情绪，这不但于事无补，还会损害了新加坡人的生计、赔上国家的繁荣以及下一代的幸福。我从政前是名公务员，曾经参与谈判自贸协定的工作，我有责任更正这些没有根据的指责。我想在这里阐明四点。 第一点，新加坡的经济支柱是什么？我们是一个弹丸小国，缺乏天然资源。我们的经济自主成功的关键在我们能不能放眼世界，借助全球化的趋势，引进投资， 引进外资，进军国际市场，来弥补我们国家资源的不足、土地小的不足，这样国人才能安居乐业，年轻人可以追逐梦想。第二点，与各国签署自贸协议用意是什么？我们通过谈判向伙伴国家争取关税豁免，促进我们的出口，这对我们的中小型企业特别重要，因为新加坡的市场真的是太小了。自贸协定可以让我们的小企业打入国际市场，大展拳脚。我国与世界各地签署了26项自贸协定，亚细安、中国、美国、欧盟、日本、韩国、印度、澳大利亚、新西兰等等，都是我们的主要市场，也是我们的自贸伙伴。自贸协定呢，也帮助我们招商引资。经济发展局经常说，当他们说服跨国公司在新加坡投资的时候，推销的一个很强的一点就是我们的自贸协定网络，我们的26个协定。当投资商来到新加坡，我们的自贸协定能帮他们进军世界各大主要市场。此外，在自贸协定的规定下，新加坡政府也有义务给他们投资，给他们的投资一定的保护。第三点，那为什么前进党的说法不正确呢？因为他们歪曲了这个自贸协定的用意，歪曲了新加坡谈判团队的用心，冤枉了我们。他们说 CIGA 让印度127个专业类别的人士可以自由入境，在新加坡生活和工作，这种说法其实是荒谬的。127个专业类别是协议里列出来的一个清单，好让相关人士参考。意思是说，你可以申请到新加坡工作，并不是说你一定会被批准，这两回事啊。最终申请者还是必须先符合申请工作准证的先决条件，才可能获得就业准证来新加坡工作。在我们所有的自贸协定里，我们的移民和外籍人才政策保持不变，谁能够入境新加坡，谁能得到工作准证，谁能成为永久居民，谁能成为公民，都由我们全权决定。第四，那我们新加坡专业人士的压力来自哪里？简单说，来自全球化的竞争，全球化的经济。我们一方面必须打开放市场，为国人打造机遇，另一方面处理它所带来的所有的竞争。所谓我们打开了窗，阳光苍蝇都进来了。但外来竞争并不完全是零和游戏，若我们减少引进一些外国专才，不等于国人必然就会有更多的工作机会。相反的，本地和外来的专才能够相辅相成，一起吸引更多外来的投资，制造更多好的就业机会。所以作为一个依赖全球经济的小国，我们面临以下的简单选择。 A， 很多竞争，很多工作，还是 B， 很少竞争，很少工作。两个极端我们都不要，我们要找的是一个平衡点，不能够矫枉过正。要确保国人继续有足够的好的工作，一些竞争是难免的。如果有人跟你敲锣打鼓，他说给你一个没竞争多工作的经济模式，这个人肯定是吹牛膏药乱卖。我们面临的另一个挑战是，我国正在全力发展数码和信息科技，这个世界里数码专才中国印度最多。 中国专才都倾向于留在当地工作，因为他们的独角兽多嘛。印度专才则往外跑，到外地寻求发展。因此，对新加坡相对来说，印度籍的数码科技专业人士变成比较多了。这是我们必须正视的现象。 政府部门正在同业界人士探讨是否能够采取离岸外包的做法，让我们只留下较高端的工作，以减少外来人的数目。不过，我们要谨慎地处理，确保不会流失整个重要的外地投资。我们应该继续探讨如何解决问题，保障新加坡人的就业机会。 使新加坡人在公平竞争的环境下脱颖而出，但是请不要随意听取不确实的言论，排斥自由贸易协会，是自由贸易协定和SIGA，以免动摇新加坡开放经济的根基。我们注意到世界上很多国家都面对了排外主义的问题，我们 不能够让他们在新加坡生根，我们应该设法消除人民的忧虑，解决人民的问题。政府有决心这么做，但我们需要新加坡人的配合，同心协力，一起守护国家繁荣的基础。Mr. Speaker, sir, I'll switch back to English to finish my speech. As I explained earlier, our FTA strategy has benefited Singaporeans and Singapore, so it is disappointing that FTAs are now a target of political attacks. But perhaps I should not be surprised, as this has happened in many countries. Such debate goes beyond FTAs. The question of global versus local has emerged as the new dominant political divide in democracies around the world. In the US, labor unions and various industry lobbies are against free trade. The Trump administration pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership within a week of taking office, even though US was the architect of the TPP agreement. In the UK, Brexit was the culmination of a bitter political contest between those who want to be part of the European Union and those who wanted out. In France, the next presidential election is likely to be a face-off between the incumbent, President Macron, and the far-right nationalist candidate. These political divides arose because of globalization. While globalization presents opportunities and creates jobs, it also brings about greater competition, displacement of industries and jobs, inflow of immigrants. These consequences go beyond the economic sphere and often strike at the heart of a nation and a community's sense of identity and security. And this is the most unsettling change, causing people to become unsure if they are on the whole better with globalization. And such concerns are genuine and deserve serious and proper attention. We are a small country, and an unrestricted flow of workers from a large country can change the lived experience of Singaporeans, alter the character of our society, and even overwhelm us. But we need to be careful that these valid concerns are not exploited by political groups and, intentionally or not, end up sowing division, stoking fear, fanning hatred. As representatives of the people, we all have a responsibility to realize that our words and deeds can shape public opinion and the direction of our political discourse. That is why when Mr. Leong Man Wai said in this house some months ago that the naturalized Singaporean CEO of DBS was not homegrown and deemed this a failure, Minister Iswaran responded with a word of caution. And I agree with Minister Iswaran and feel that members of the House should be very careful about what we say on such matters if we are not to give credence to to a very negative, even ugly, minority view. And that is also why we appreciated the leader of the opposition standing up to say that when it comes to racism and xenophobia, we all have to reject them and there can be no ifs and buts about it. Mr. Speaker, sir, before I conclude, let me remind members that the House has invoked Standing Order 44 so that the members from the PSP can give a full response after Dr. Tan Si Ling's speech. But even if Mr. Leong Man Wai and Ms. Hazel Pua choose not to, I will be happy to clarify questions from members. The PAP always fight for the welfare of Singaporeans. We have done so for more than 60 years now, kept our country safe, brought jobs to Singaporeans, built up our infrastructure, and taken care of the welfare of all. As a city-state connected to the world, we want to welcome diverse talents from all over the world. And when they are here, we invite them to fit into our society, respect our social habits and norms, appreciate our multicultural society, join us at our hawker centres, try some durians, try some sambal belacan, speak a few phrases of Singlish. And when Singaporeans, we go overseas to live and work, and about 200,000 of us do, we expect the same of ourselves and hope that we also receive hospitable welcomes from our foreign hosts too. I decided to make this statement today so that we can approach the debate on the PSP's subsequent motion with the right perspective and motivation. The House should continue to debate robustly the pros and cons of various policies to help Singapore navigate this balance between global and local. But we must not inadvertently shake the bedrock that has enabled Singapore to succeed. We cannot survive, we cannot earn a living without being connected to the world, without being welcoming to the world, without the House unanimously supporting our FTA strategy. And we must always be a big-hearted people, even while we grapple with the significant challenges of globalization, to forge the best path forward for Singapore. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.